Okay, we are back, I believe, for episode 297. Joe, how are you doing?
Just fine, Tim. Had an eventful week, as I mentioned to you before we started recording. But at the moment, I'm in good spirits and waiting to embrace the, what do you want to call it, the wave of immigration that America is about to experience. I mean, I know we have other subjects we'll talk about first, but here in California, we're actually kind of looking at the ending of our border with a little bit of concern. So we'll discuss that later on.
Yeah. California, I think, is a good one. I think a test case. So it's a bellwether state for what they have in store for the rest of the union. This week, there was some news was made regarding, Joe Biden, the Biden family, and the corruption of the Biden family. There was a whistleblower, Bud Cummins, brought evidence to the attention of, this was back in 2018, to the U.S. Attorney General Jeff Berman of the criminal behavior of the Vice President Joe Biden. Then it was the just Vice President. Of course, he was out of office. He was a former Vice President. They still call him Vice President. He brought evidence of this corruption that we're all hearing about now. And instead of investigating Joe Biden, Berman investigated Cummins for bringing him the information. Obviously, the Department of Justice is just as corrupt as the FBI, which is, of course, part of the Department of Justice and all the other alphabet soup agencies. But we've had these hearings being held. The House Republicans was able to produce evidence of a network of Biden family dealings, which just reek of corruption. That the Biden family received over $10 million in payments from foreign nationals. Previously undisclosed $1 million payment in Romanian link payments, ties Romanian influence peddling. There was a web of 20 LLCs, limited liability corporations, created while Joe Biden was vice president, with a complicated corporate structure, which of course is highly suggestive of what we call money laundering. At least 15 of the LLCs were found after Biden became vice president in 2009. So he was cashing in. Several of them, which were owned by or co-owned by his son Hunter, infamous son Hunter Biden. The LLCs accepted payments ranging from $5,000 to $3 million. The committee wants to know what legitimate businesses the Biden family was in, which they cannot explain. they just exist to take in money for some reason. Now, this is an obvious case of influence peddling with these LLCs. The money transfers going to multiple members of the Biden family. I think even to some children, or at least very young adults, which again is curious to say the least. The Romanian transaction outline of the bank records released by the committee were from a Cypriot, a company controlled by Gabriel Popovicu, who was at the time under investigation for criminal corruption in Romania and later convicted for bribery-related offenses. Between 2015 and 2017, Robinson Walker LLC received $3 million from Bladon Enterprises Limited. That's Popovicu's Cypriot company, which is then paid out to the Biden family members in a total sum of $1 million. Representative James Comey had scheduled a press conference to lay out the array of evidence against the Biden family after claiming in a recent interview that he has evidence that the Department of Justice is fair to look into the web of LLCs that have taken in the millions of dollars from foreign countries in exchange for policy actions. I mean, Biden's on record admitting as much when he bragged about getting the prosecutor in Ukraine fired, who was giving him trouble with Hunter's dealings with Burisma. Nevertheless, despite all the documentation produced, New York Times ran a headline that said, House of Republicans report finds no evidence of wrongdoing by President Biden. Well, I guess he wasn't president then, right? So it was Vice President Biden. But here we go. Ordinarily, evidence would be the existence of such LLCs and the transfer of funds, which cannot be explained, which are highly suggestive of influence peddling and bribery when you're a public official, of course. But nevertheless, even the Biden administration claims there's no evidence. But then, of course, the evidence is the fact that they're not really disputing the fact that there is a boatload of evidence suggesting the very thing that they're denying happening. The fact that the Biden family would become multimillionaires after years of public service. I mean, isn't it just at this point, isn't it ridiculous to deny that these political families have become rich during their public service, that there may be something of fishy going on here? And that when you produce records, payments by foreign nationals who are criminals and companies that have dealings with the government, you're raking in millions of dollars for policies that you either implement or lobby to get changed. It's highly, I mean, to me, that's a pretty strong case of influence peddling, corruption, if not worse, something like treason. But say you?
Well, obviously, you're correct. I look at this whole the visible corruption that our politicians, you know, are revealed with as a different light than a lot of people. I mean, I look at that chain of the LLCs and who it's interacting with. And I'm very sad to say, but I know a lot about that because I had business dealings early in my life with people.
Well, Joe, can I interrupt you for a second?
Of course.
I'm a simpleton.
Okay? I know. Me too.
I'm a simpleton. If there is a complicated chain of transactions,
yeah,
is there any reason to have that exist other than hiding the source of the money, right? Or where it's going?
Not. Of course not.
Right? Okay, yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what this is. It's criminal in and of itself because if he was a corporate officer, if Biden was not the president, but rather he was the president of a corporation, and this was a financial transaction that involved funds, you know, that were entwined somehow with the corporation, the burden would be on him. I mean, he first of all, you couldn't do anything like this. Something this hidden would be just prima facie, they would fire him. But in terms of criminal, action, the burden would be on him to prove that this stuff wasn't criminal, because you when you do something like this, it's just obvious that there's only one reason that you would be making the transaction so complicated that it can't be followed. Mm-hmm. You said, I mean, it is in and of itself criminality. As you point out. It's certainly not just suggestive, but it is actually circumstantial evidence that you could use trying to get him convicted if this was a court of law. However, I'm really not sure it's real, because in my opinion, this is such low level gangsterism. I mean, this is just so gutter finance criminal, you know, kind of activity. It's like his son, you know, his son, when you see him, pictures of him, mm-hmm. Blown out on crack with hose in his apartment, you know, and he looks seedy and he's unshaven. I mean, I think really this is all just psychological kind of operation, that they're just step by step debasing the view of the politicians that the populace have, because they're slowly, you know, kind of removing the fantasy of democracy. And so by having Trump, with Stormy Daniels, and then, you know, Biden's son, you know, with crack and hose. And we're just starting to see the political class, not in its real light, but in the way that they want us to experience them, so we don't have any hope that there could ever be anything that would benefit us that would come out of our political process. That's what I actually think it is. Because let me just point this out, that if they wanted to transfer, you know, billions of dollars to the oligarchic puppet politicians like Biden and his son, they could do that under the table. I mean, the Federal Reserve is not audited. Who would know that, you know, a wire transfer of 50 million or 100 million, whatever these sums are, occurred? You couldn't know. So if they wanted to keep it hidden, they would. And since they don't, you have these never-ending trials where all of these things get revealed. It seems like these are very sleazy, criminal-type people. There's never any convictions, that no one ever goes to jail. But the public just step-by-step is being, you know, led down to where you can actually have, you know, just really low-level gangsters. Right. you know, operating the political system, and you just get used to it. So that's what I think it is. I mean, obviously, the Biden family is, there's no limit on the criminality, on the moral debasement. There's no limit. They're just satanic. But I think that, you know, we'll see that this whole legal process is just goes nowhere, no convictions. And it's just like how pornography was introduced with, you know, Clinton's, you know, scandal with Lewinsky. It just gives them a chance to talk about how corrupt and how venal the political class is.
Yeah, you think maybe, you know, they just get reckless, perhaps. I don't know, thinking that no one's going to touch them. You could always, I mean, you could, the traditional way to do it is to have a politician like write a book that no one reads and giving them a huge advance. Then a third party buying up, you know, a million copies of the book. I remember the classic case was Speaker of the House Jim Wright, who got $500,000 or something for a book that had like one word a page or something.
Yeah, I mean, but there's
and he had to resign. Remember, this? Yeah. Newt Gingrich exposed that. Yeah,
there's a legitimate low-level gangster corruption that the political class engages in, and from time to time, you know, they get exposed, and there's a conviction.
Well, how does Barack Obama afford a mansion in Martha's Vineyard?
He's got a house just down the street from me.
That and a house, I think, also like in Virginia and in Chicago.
He's between Oprah and Harry and Meghan. I mean, where does he come up with this kind of money? What did he do?
A community organizer made good.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable.
And his wife, sit on a board of some hospital making $350,000 for doing nothing.
My point is that it is just a fake world. Because and one of the primary ways that they can construct propaganda is by the fact that we can't see where money comes from or where it goes.
Yeah.
There's no auditing. And so therefore, these billionaires pop up. Soros, where does he get all this money? Zuckerberg, I mean, even Bill Gates. I mean, Gates, of course, has a corporation, but, you know, how he is created from the onset and funded. I mean, it's all an illusion.
Well, what's really telling here is like someone like a Biden he's a great politician having power for the oligarchs, even for the bureaucracies like the deep state, because they have the goods on him. There's no way he's going to hold the DOJ or CIA or FBI to account, which is, you know, theoretically his job, because they got the goods on him. And that Congress has, I think, requested that the CIA, the FBI produce the laptop and the evidence, and they can't do it. They're claiming, sources and methods. They can't reveal it. Like there's a confidential informant involved in it. And one way they go about doing it is the FBI could name Hunter Biden as a confidential informant, then prevent Congress from saying it.
Right.
they're playing, obviously they're playing defense for Biden. But it's my point is, and someone once said, you can figure out more about politics than reading the newspaper, New York Times, of course, or the Washington Post, or the various pundits, what they have to say about politicians and their families and the positions they take and all that. Just look at their bank accounts. Follow the money, and you can find out, figure it out, because they're becoming millionaires in office. You don't do that unless you're corrupt. You get IPOs or funded. Like Nancy Pelosi or like Hillary Clinton, down in Arkansas, she was appointed to the board of Walmart. Oh, what? Because she had retail experience,
right?
I
think that at the onset you have just kind of low level criminality. They can bribe them. There's sexual perversions. They can film them. You know, there's all of this sort of.
You're suggesting politicians are venal?
Yeah, I am. And but then, when you get into the big leagues, you have access to the Federal Reserve money. And honestly, if they wanted to have, billions of dollars in the control of Clinton or, Barack Obama or Biden, this could all happen and no one would know. There would just be, it could literally be like a credit card that comes in the mail, which has a $1 trillion limit, and no one would even have a clue.
Well, that effectively, what happens, like if they're given free stays at hotels, like J. Edgar Hoover got, right?
Exactly. So there's just, these guys just have no relationship between their life and earning money. It just, in my opinion, it just doesn't exist. But nevertheless, you know, these are really important kind of criminal elements to keep putting in front of the public. We just have to try to make sure that we remind the public that we actually have the capacity to have better moral people in office than the ones that we have. We don't have to just get beaten down, blackpilled, and just accept a ever reducing moral basis for our political class. You know, we can fight back. And what it really does, what I really hope it engenders, is the place you can fight back politically is locally. You know, you're not, we're not going to be able to get a presidential candidate running. In my opinion, it isn't under complete control. But we can certainly, you know, get school boards and mayors and supervisors and sheriffs, those offices. So let's start there and try to work our way up, you know, because the being disappointed because Trump loses, or, you know, whatever happens at the presidential or even like the senatorial, those races, in my opinion, are absolutely fixed. There's just nothing real about them. I hate to be cynical and blackpill people, but I just don't think that that's real. You know, I think that both, if it's a close race, you can just be sure that both individuals are under control of the secret society.
We have this week, Daniel Penny. He was a 24-year-old college student and a decorated Marine who intervened to stop a belligerent homeless man named Jordan Neely from assaulting people on a New York subway, held him in a chokehold, and Jordan Neely ended up at least reportedly dying from his injuries from the chokehold. He's been indicted by the Manhattan prosecutor for this offense. This basically what this illustrates is that the authorities will neglect their responsibility to protect the public in the streets and battle the streets on the subway. But if members of the public act to protect the public and themselves, they'll be prosecuted.
Remember, you point out that he's white.
Yes.
I mean, whites are second-class citizens in the inner cities.
Well, it's interesting. He had two people helping him, one of whom was black.
I know. That's so true.
Have they been indicted?
I don't know. Because, I mean, my understanding is that the black guy actually was the kind of began it, but this guy evidently has training in martial arts, and he took over the kind of the restraint and then ended up on the ground. And the restraint hold he was using was just, you know, it was a way to protect himself.
Yes.
You know, didn't want the guy to be moving around a lot.
Well, Neely reportedly had said that I don't care about going to jail. I'll do anything. I don't care about my life, which is somewhat threatening. And of course he had.
Well, when you're dealing with someone like that, who's basically assaulting other people and you're trying to defend them, how do you protect yourself? You know, we're going to be into a situation. Well, we are into it, but it's going to become transparent that, we are second-class citizens inside of the Soros DA zones. They will have a different set of laws. I sent that email, forwarded to you from the righteous individual in Oakland who, a white person who was worked very close to the white guy was beaten to death by the mob a couple of weeks ago during one of these sideshow things where he, you know, took issue with it and the mob turned on him and just beat him to death. I'm not sure he died, but I saw the videos. I would be amazed if he lived. Anyway, and he pointed out that this the righteous individual in Oakland, he said, you know, the hatred to whites is turned up to 11, you know, and no one can talk about it. You cannot bring up this fact. It's just in this zone. You don't even talk about it, among peers, evidently. I have family members who live close to Oakland. And they actually, in these other zones where you don't have intimidation and you have different kinds of DAs, basically, you don't have the incarceration philosophy, you know, in full flight. They're talking about it all the time. In fact, they're leaving these areas. The adjacent suburbs to Oakland are draining out because people can see that this violence is going to come right at them. So we're resegregating as a nation as we speak. And part of this, of course, is going to be the replacements. I don't know if this is the time you want to talk about this, but they're changing Title 42. They're ending it. It ended actually 3 days ago. And this basically ends the existence of a border. I mean, it's legal end of the border, because the way the law works now is that if they claim they're seeking asylum, and they all do, they will never be granted asylum unless they have these qualifications. And this is what they're telling the public, that don't worry, we're not going to suddenly get a whole lot of new people being granted asylum. What they're not mentioning, Tim, is that the new law does not permit incarceration. And these people who come across the border and the agents apprehend are simply released into the U.S. And we just hope they show up at the hearing, which, well, what do you think the odds are? I mean, is it going to be 1 in 1,000 will show up? Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically at the rate that they're talking about, we're going to get 3 million new immigrants a year coming in from Central Central America and Mexico. These individuals, as a collection, very low education level, So what is their life going to be like? And to accommodate them, and this is really, I think, just bizarre, is like in New York City, they're rezoning hotels and vacant buildings. Have you been following this? Have you like actually seen what they're doing? Like the Roosevelt Hotel, which is a place I'm familiar with. It's in downtown Manhattan. It's completely being renovated so that it can accommodate the illegal, aliens coming into the United States. So.
Yeah, it's they're obviously, the government just simply letting the border collapse, not even a border anymore, and then I don't treat it like a border. The presumption is you have to accept these people in and accommodate them and give them all types of benefits. Of course, that's absurd. That's not written into the Constitution. And yeah, they're just going to overwhelm the country. And that's the idea, perhaps. But again, going back to, again, this is all part of this, again, creating chaos and the government not doing what it should be doing, like whether in New York City subway. And again, if people try to defend themselves, their communities, they will be prosecuted. A couple of years ago, there was a case in South Carolina, another, I think it was in the Army, a gentleman named Jonathan Pentland, who apparently responded to someone who was being assaulted by a Black man in their neighborhood. And he went out and intervened. Apparently this Black man had tried to fondle a woman, pull her shorts down, then tried to kidnap a child in the neighborhood. He was just acting up. He went out there and he told him, "You don't belong here, get out of here." And that was there was an altercation that was filmed. He pushed him. The police went to go arrest Jonathan Pentland for assault. And this is, again, the Department of the Police just letting this happen. Then a Black mob showed up, Black Lives Matter showed up, started protesting around his house, then breaking windows, violating his property. The police did nothing for him. And yeah. So again, this is the case where, there's what they're saying is that you cannot, not only will we not defend your property, if you try to defend yourself and your property, you will be prosecuted. And well, the good news is that, like in the case of Daniel Penny, is like he's raised $1 million for his legal defense fund. So evidently there's a lot of support out there for him. The problem is prosecutors, like one in Manhattan, just they'll just do it because they can do it. And there's no shame anymore or sense of duty. To them, it's, whether it's tribal or ethnic or part of a plan to just sow chaos. And, the fact you can't, the police didn't show up. Like in the old days, if a mob showed up at someone's house, a counter mob would show up and chase them away. If that happens, like a white mob shows up, they'll arrest the white folks.
Of course.
And then as they're being arrested, to preach them about white supremacy and their privilege.
Yeah. So we just have to have new strategies. I mean, obviously, the videos and the public declarations about what's going on, and even the publicity about the exodus, business exodus.
Well, people are watching the videos of the looting. Aren't white people doing this? The crime. I think right now, if you look at the crime stats, black on white crime. Blacks are 42 times more likely to assault a white than vice versa. I think 11-1 for murder, it's kind of like, what are you talking about? And people know this, you know, that crime is out of control. One of the reasons why crime stats, one thing is they're saying crime's dropping statistically because it's not being reported anymore. There are laws passed in several states called so-called anti-Karen laws, where if your call is racially motivated, let's say you see something happening, then you can be charged.
Yeah. You know. So the thing is,
I mean, no one's calling the cops when they see something, right? Like what happened with you told me what happened with your relatives. They didn't call the cops, but there was a crime committed. They just went home.
Yeah. I mean, there's no cops that'll come. So, just to digress, if you want good statistics, there's a website called Hey Jackass, and it has a minute by minute up to date statistical outline of Chicago going back like 15, 20 years, really detailed. And you can see, you know, the racial composition of the crimes and you can see, for example, the decline in arrests relative to the percentage of carjackings, and the carjacking in Chicago is just epidemic. But the bigger point is we need to come up with strategies to one, be able to talk about this stuff, and two, to get out and get away from these areas. I mean, I honestly, you know, don't know how like a white family with heritage America values, even if they're into like the woke, I mean, how they could function in a fully functioning Soros DA zone, where the majority population have a kind of super legal status and are being given information by the public schools and by the media that white people are evil. You see what I mean? In other words, this combination of decarceration plus the media just constantly bombarding people with the idea that the white people are evil. And then they get the propagandists, the oligarch propagandists who make films like Quentin Tarantino, where the whites are always evil and then the black people are always killing them, right? Mm-hmm. They're giving these visual cues. So if you're in one of these zones where you have like a Soros DA, where you have no police protection and you have sideshows going on and they're really starting to act out, I mean, I would say you have to honestly look at, okay, when people leave without like proper financial planning, it's always a loser. Obviously, you know, you might lose value in the property, your job, whatever. I would just say at this point, you just have to pull the plug because you're really endangering your whole family. So you need to you know, come up with a strategy, get out to some area where, you know, the DA is still interested in defending the citizens, right, regardless of color of their race, and then trying to just plug into those cultures. You know, and if they do that, and they bring that attitude with them, an awareness, you know, of what the workers' paradise of the Soros DA zones is actually like. It's just this hell on earth, you know, for white people and for everyone who is of civilized, you know, of aspirations. I mean, Asians, black middle class intellectuals, the guys that call me up all the time, listen to the show, they're always complaining about how they're as afraid as anyone about, you know, the sons of the Great Society programs. You know, they're going in the other direction, trying to create wealth and, you know, family and whatnot. They have no place to plug into. So everyone has to just get out and expand the autonomous zones, permit it to exist, encourage it, and then just get away from it and bifurcate from it, seal it off somehow. You know, once you get to a place where you can have some political power, then you can go to work and try to make a better life. But Tim, I mean, I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, be theoretical. I mean, what could you do if you were like a white middle class family in the middle of Oakland? what would you be able to do? How would you defend
my yourself? First answer, what are you doing there?
Well, that's the point. That would be exactly the right response. And so you have to go someplace where you, and when you leave, carefully select the kind of the political awareness and capacity for political self-defense of the community you want to enter into.
Yeah, well, it requires, again, sort of reevaluating what's happened before you can decide what you're going to do in the future. And acknowledging this isn't just chaos or stupidity, it's malice.
Yeah.
The government, particularly the federal government, is your enemy. Your local government may or may not be the enemy, depends where you go, of course. But right now, you know, the federal government, it's various soup agencies. The FBI, if it wanted to, it could crack down on this stuff. A good example is during the George Floyd riots, which is an op. That was a great example of the media, the government, just spinning that in a narrative just to agitate and create mayhem all across the country for various reasons. Is they could have easily tracked down like the source of funding, who's paying for the U-Hauls, who's delivering the bricks, and the food. There's a food truck there supplying the protesters. All this is organized. These protests are all organized, and they can investigate it and do a forensic study of where the money's coming from and invoke RICO and shut it down. But they're not interested in that. They're interested in actually covering up, because at the end of the day, Black Lives Matter and Antifa are actually working for the FBI and the feds.
Sure. Globalists. Look at Portland, where they had the camps, which housed on city funding the rioters who would appear every night.
Yeah,
I mean, these individuals had like baseball cards. I mean, the people knew who they were. They were some of them were famous, like Trumpet Man, like a satanic anarchist in Portland. He showed up every night, and they knew where he lived. It was in a compound, very nice organized compounds paid for by taxpayer money with all the other rioters. Well, you don't think that the DA would have a hard time tracking these people down, who are violating like 10 laws every night, but they don't, because they are, as you point out, these are agents of chaos. What you're seeing, the chaos you're seeing, the destruction of the city, this is not like bad politics or, failed socialism or any of the other explanations that are actually, to me, they're just nonsensical and airheaded. This is a plan that is working. This is success. This is what it is designed to do. People talk, they get up and they go, well, stupid liberals, they voted for this, and see, I told you, socialism doesn't work. I mean, really, of course, that socialism doesn't work. That doesn't really explain, the extent of the damage we're dealing with and why the government is not. It is encouraging the violence, right? So the kind of stage in the thinking of middle class people where they blame socialism or whatever, this is just a incorrect position mentally. They have to understand it isn't failure they're looking at, it's success.
Well, they're at war.
Yes,
think of it. You're at war, and you don't say, why is my enemy being unfair to me? Yeah. Well, you don't know. You just acknowledge you're at war and proceed from there and devise a strategy. But if you're not going to acknowledge the war, then you're going to lose, because they're not going to just leave you alone, because it's not fair. It's Hippocratic. It's like, pointing out, just like when in Tennessee, when those three representatives there are expelled for inciting a riot in the House legislature. And of course, the Biden administration then invites them up. The three insurrectionists, if you will, celebrates them and says, to point out the hypocrisy, this is the same White House which is going after the January 6th protesters and calling them insurrectionists and white supremacists. Oh, look at the hypocrisy. Yeah, I acknowledge the hypocrisy, but I mean, you're not going to shame them and they're being consistent. They know that, it's war. So you're at war with these people. That's the problem. You have to acknowledge that. And that's another thing with the immigration issue. It's not incompetence.
Yeah.
Not stupidity at the border. It is treason at the border. It's dereliction of duty. It's violation of the law. This idea, just because Title 42 ends, which is a pretext under COVID to keep people penned up doesn't mean that absent of COVID, you have to open up the floodgates and allow the bum rush to come into the country. Why are all these people coming in these lines? You know, obviously there's a whole list of NGOs that are facilitating this, funding this and all that. You know, investigate that. It's an act of war, it's an invasion, and it's being facilitated by agents within the federal government, particularly the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, who is facilitating it.
You know what it's actually kind of like? It's bamboozlement, you know, which of course is an act of war, and they have this really very crude bamboozling stature where they're saying, look, there isn't going to be any more asylum granted under the new law, so don't worry about it. This is exactly like or parallel to when they changed the immigration laws, you know, back in the 60s, and then they said, don't worry about it. The demographics of the country are going to be protected, and we're not going to be transforming this into, you know, other than, you know, majority European nation. When they perfectly well knew what was going to occur with the changes. They obviously knew, but the public was simply believing that the government could be trusted. They accepted all this. And here they have the same excuse where, you know, not to worry, they won't be granted asylum unless other than very, you know, strict conditions. But they don't mention the fact that they aren't going to be incarcerated, that they will be registered as not having been granted asylum and then released into the United States.
Yeah, now, if not released, they'll be transported.
They will be transported.
Blown and bust.
Exactly. Where they want to go or where they want to take them.
In the dead of night.
And then they will, if they voluntarily show up and ask to have a legal process to determine whether or not they will be granted asylum, it can go forward. Gee whiz. What a shock.
Well, how much have we spent in Ukraine? 100 billion? 100
billion? 20 billion.
So we're theoretically defending Ukraine from Russia, but we're just letting our border collapse. And it's treated as a morality, a humanitarian issue. If you oppose it, you're racist. You know, but apparently there's a lawsuit, 13 attorneys general sued. And there's been a stay, a federal judge, Judge Thomas Kent Wetherell of the U.S. District Court of Northern District of Florida issued a temporary restraining order blocking the Biden administration from directing the Border Patrol to release illegal aliens. It constitutes a sort of administrative change of the law. If the Biden administration simply doesn't have the authority to change immigration law, that's a job of Congress. But you have these states, Texas, Alabama, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, West Virginia. So what we have is, at least at the state level, apparently you do have some government officials that are actually defending the interest of the constituents, of their people that live there. It's the federal government which is betraying them, which is indication, again, you're getting more bang for your buck or for your vote at the state level to the federal government. Evidently, those governments aren't as infiltrated as our federal government is, which is just a sort of a tool of oligarchic interest.
It's so heinous. I mean, the vast majority, I've seen videos of the immigrants. Everyone has. There are some children and women.
370,000 children are now reportedly working in factories and sex trafficking and. So it's facilitated that hundreds of thousands of children, unaccompanied minors. So the federal government is facilitating human trafficking. No surprise there.
Well, the vast majority, I'd say just from the videos I've seen, like over 70% are young males.
A lot of them are like from like Asia and Africa. I was like, what? South Central America or Mexico?
They come up with the money to get to Mexico. You know,
that's where we get those NGOs, IsraAid, HIAS,
of course,
Hebrew Israel Aid Society, countless other, and also other charities, Catholic charities, which is just has been utilized for this. And that's apparently been taken over by Jews, from what I understand. So,
yeah. Well, you get, basically you're going to have, I think Europeans would be what, 0.1% of the immigrants who are coming in, something like that. So it'll be, people of color, I think would be, an expression in general. they're going to have very low educational levels on in general, right? They will be very tempted to take advantage of the incarceration laws. I mean, think about the trajectory of these young males that are going to come into the country by the tens of thousands every day. Mm-hmm. Okay, they don't really have any, they have weak English skills at best. They have almost no family structure. They're going to basically plug into packs, into groups, but the cities will have places for them to live. There will be resources given to them to some extent, but they will obviously be tempted to take advantage of the criminal lifestyle, particularly now that it's been decriminalized. I mean, they would frankly be stupid not to. So what you're going to have is, I would guess, is pretty dramatic increases in, violent street crime, robberies, carjacking, stuff like that.
The numbers that are coming in, again, so they're not, they can't assimilate. In fact, they develop subcultures and ghettos, and they don't learn the language. So the problems of Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, whatever, are going to be imported in the country because those countries are the way they are because the people in that country. So if they come in large numbers, they're going to bring those problems here. To what benefit? Is anyone asking? And this is just why should America? How does this benefit Americans?
There's no
possible any benefit. So why do it?
Well, because it'll destroy America. And again,
That's what Americans have to.
They have to understand.
Without
the understanding, the government stands against them. It stands with the oligarchs, the government, against the people. You just cannot make any sense of this world. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. That because you just get, you'll be sidetracked into trying to analyze things like, well, what level of humanitarian aid is, things like this.
Well, allows them to rule over the country. They rule over California, the loony politics that comes with this babble. Exactly. They're creating.
Is that
because you no longer have a core white middle class to keep things relatively honest and responsive.
That's the reason. There it is. They are diluting down so-called heritage European America with individuals who will not share any of the values or educational levels, who will be a part of the welfare and criminal state. Because let's face it, let us be honest here. When you talk about, for example, like Oakland, and you talk about the welfare state now, right, in the incarcerated era, you're really talking about a merging of the criminal class and the welfare class. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, honest, isn't that an honest description of the vast majority of people who are participating in like the sideshows and the mobs and the break-ins and the mass robbings, of retail stores. So this is the culture that these young men are going to enter into. Do you think, what percentage of them are going to go like to night school to learn English and to develop a job as a computer scientist? You might have an occasional headline, kind of one character out of 1,000, but the vast majority of them are
really not. That's why the California college system has dropped its testing standards to get more of them.
Sure.
They have to drop all standards. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
So, but not only that, you also have an overall drop in standards. You can't have a civilization without standards. And they're dropping all the standards to accommodate all the new people of color, which evidently can't live up to the standards of what they call white supremacy. That's what the African American Museum is all about. Punctuality, being polite, perfectionist. These things these are the things that enable you to build bridges and build airplanes, aviation, and have a modern society, have a power grid and water that runs. It's this.
But the thing is, what's really kind of the most irritating thing of all this, and gee, there's so many, is that there isn't even any honest description of the phenomena. You don't have some politician standing up there and going, these young men who are crossing our border illegally and who are then, going to be, in our world, they're not being let in because the Democratic Party has a mistaken understanding of humanistic principles. They're being let in because they want to destroy a heritage America. This is what they have in mind. The government is against the people. It is a secret society. It does not let the public know what its real values are.
If you have any doubt about that, you have the statement of Barbara Leonard Spector and her organization. That's seeking to destroy Sweden. She has said that the European ethnic states have to go, and her and her other Jews are going to be spearheading this, the forefront of this, and they're going to be resented for it. She acknowledges this, but somehow she thinks she has been anointed to carry out this policy in regards to Sweden. You have other people, whether it's Ireland. Ireland's being inundated. It's not just the United States that's happening. It's happening throughout Europe. England is projected to have a non-white population by year 2060 or something. That's all low birth rate, native birth rates, and high immigration rates. Now, why is that? That's a policy. It's a freaking island, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
With Ireland, it's an island and it's being inundated.
Yeah. It's happening everywhere. It's always catastrophic to every imaginable statistical understanding of a nation. And so why is it occurring time and time and time again? Well, gee, it's a plan. It isn't stupidity. It isn't a mistaken social program. It's a successful social program. That's what it is. And so the public, you know, again, we tell them, understand what's going on and being honest about it is a step at this point towards self-defense. You know, to the ability to defend yourself, people who are in these areas and are in danger, they have to get the hell out. They have to find some place where some community where it is possible to organize politically and have some power. And then once you do it, you have to be as, you know, determined as, you know, a bull about defending yourself, you know, and you're going to need a brave DA and a brave sheriff and brave citizens.
Well, but there was there's a story in Chicago. Chicago's migrants dumped in Chicago shelter could destroy Black communities, residents say. The residents of Chicago's South Side continued to protest a plan to house illegal immigrants in an abandoned high school in the neighborhood, insisting that it would endanger Black residents already struggling. There are only one bus of migrants has arrived in Chicago this week from the border states. Leaders expect more and plan to house hundreds of at Windy City at a South Shore High School, Chicago's Fox 32 reported. Many of those who live in the area are concerned about the decision's impact on the community, with several Black members from the area protesting the move outside the school on Thursday. Now, are they racist? Why would any leader put our Black communities already riddled with crime at further risk by placing unvetted, non-taxpayer steps away from our seniors, our children, our homes we've worked so hard our own to secure, said Jay Darnell Jones, a resident of South Shore. It's interesting that this guy actually says there's something, the Black community, as if the Black community is a legitimate group. Does anyone say when this happens to a white neighborhood, say, who's going to defend our white community? You know,
because they're intimidated to tell the truth. But
yeah,
this guy is completely correct. And let me tell you, Tim, I always like to prognosticate. It won't be very long before these citadels that they're creating, like the hotel in New York that I mentioned, that they're going to be zones of warlords who will be in battle with the street life crimes that's going on now. The Roosevelt Hotel is really going to be fascinating to see. I mean, it's been, you know, COVID closed it down. They're going to reopen it and they're going to put nothing but illegal immigrants in it. They're talking about like 1,000 rooms of immigrants inside this thing. Now, think about this. What do you think these people are going to do? How are they going to make an impact for themselves in their lives? They're going to go out as the Roosevelt Hotel Raiders and dominate the turf around them. They're in Manhattan, but there's already street crimes there. And so what I'm saying is you're going to start having kind of Hobbesian street cults fighting against one another. There's going to be, you know, there'll be gangs fighting. It'll be like gangs of New York, except times 1,000. So this is just obvious that this is going to happen. This will be the result. This is what they want. So just draw a line around, you know, the Soros DA zone, and then try to find a place that is safe relative to that zone, because it's just kind of there's just no way that this process ends up with, you know, the people in the Roosevelt Hotel all going to night school to become, you know, U.S. citizens and computer programmers. I mean, it's going to end up with the vast majority of the young men are going to be swept up into the street crime life. They'll be selling drugs. There'll be violence, robberies, and everywhere around that zone, everywhere around for a half a mile around the Roosevelt Hotel will be uninhabitable to middle class heritage mm-hmm. Americans. They won't be able to go there, right? You cannot put 1,000 immigrants into that concentrated a zone, have no plan for them to integrate into the culture, right? No plan whatsoever. And they bringing almost no intellectual or kind of like business type skills with them. That's why they're coming here. What do you think is going to happen? It's obvious what's going to happen. There's going to be a massive increase in street crime. They're being brought up to be gangs to destroy these cities so that they will just be zones that will need a strong government to manage the peripheries to give, you know, more power to the oligarchs. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just, it's pretty straightforward in my opinion. So.
Well, yeah, obviously it's, you know, it's weaponized migration. But again, this goes back to the Refugee Act, I think, which just goes back to 1975, where one Lionel Rosenblatt, a Jewish diplomat and future president of Refugees International, was working on persuading Ted Kennedy to back legislation providing a visa program for refugees from Indochina in the wake of the Vietnam War and what was going on in Cambodia. This actually was very controversial at the time. Of course, we know what happened like in Texas, where these refugees were dumped and disrupted those communities. But this was an amendment or a change to the McCarran-Walter Act, which was passed in 1952, which allowed certain foreign aliens could be paroled into the country at the discretion of the Attorney General. I think this was directed primarily towards people from communist countries. But it was extended or expanded in 1975 by Rosenblatt. The McCarran-Walter Act increased the decision-making power that was given to the, at that time, it was a Judiciary Subcommittee of the Immigration and Citizens International Law, meaning Congress could pass a special law granting citizenship or granting asylum. But again, these laws were changed by, there was one Joshua Eilberg, another Jewish Democrat who worked to expand the law. And another one was Congressman Elizabeth Holtzman, who got Ted Kennedy to cover for her in supporting and expanding the law. So these are, again, they're supposed to provide for political refugees and asylum. Now it's like a general asylum. Anybody wants to come to the country, they claim because life is tough in some, you know, country in South America or Asia or Africa, they can just come in. And now we have is a bum rush. So this all dates back to that and the Refugee Act of 1980. There's Kevin McDonald writes about this, about Jewish role in immigration. He said, Jewish organizations have uniformly advocated high levels of immigration of all racial and ethnic groups into Western societies, and have also advocated multiracial model for these societies. The reasons for this uniformity include the historical Jewish interest in securing immigration rights for Jews and the fact that pluralism is conducive to increasing feelings of Jewish security. This creates a state of affairs in which Jews become just one of many ethnic groups instead of a sole outgroup in a, you know, predominantly homogeneous, particularly a Christian country.
Is that working in Israel with the Palestinians?
So
I'm lost. I mean they.
So basically, the usual suspects, right? And of course, yeah. We go back to the, infamous, 1965 immigration law, which primary Sponsors were Jacob Javits, Emmanuel Seller, Leo Pfeffer of the American Jewish Committee, and Norman Poteritz. He was a Jewish member of the Council of Foreign Relations. They all advocated for this. And again, this is a strategy, which they open. This is why you have the very prominent Jewish role in all of these immigration, mass immigration into the country. And of course, we have right now, of course, the Biden administration, which is heavily Jewish. And we have, of course, the Jewish head of the Department of Homeland Security overseeing the collapse of the U.S. border and the southern border. Apparently, there's nothing can be done. It's just going to happen. It's like weather, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it really exposes the Republicans as controlled opposition. You know, they would be able to prevent this if they were, you know, legitimate in their representations to the public as to what they are, what they stand for. They could absolutely stop this, but they're not. You know, these things are ordered by the oligarchs and the our fake political parties, and the fake Congress just rubber stamps it. There's some debate and then it doesn't really matter. And then the public is too beaten down to do anything at this point. And the next thing you know, all of these young, you know, criminal age, to use an expression, youth are inside these cities. And now once they're there, once they're physically occupying the Roosevelt Hotel, it's over. You can't.
Yeah, why offer that? Why offer Medicaid, or why offer, you know, food stamps, or why offer, you know, any, it's simply, if you create that magnet and send out a signal, and believe me, there are countless non-governmental organizations that are organizing these things, these people, giving them the information, the maps, providing the, they're not walking all the way up. You see these film of people walking up a road, they're being busted, and that's a photo op.
Caribbean. I mean, how are they going to walk from Haiti? You know, I mean, they're boat rides. It's all being paid for. The NGOs are everywhere. This is an operation tip to stern. The media doesn't report it. They give a fictional version of like some destitute family coming across the Sonora Desert, you know, so worthy. Mm-hmm. That's nothing to do with reality whatsoever. And these are people that are being encouraged.
Well, how come like in the 1960s, 50s and 40s, this wasn't happening.
Right. Well, because there was a border.
Well, there was Operation Wetback, the Eisenhower administration. You need a mass deportation policy. The problem is you need the political leadership willing to do that. And the problem is you don't have a political leadership in Washington, D.C.
And the country. How debilitated our country is. Say you had a law. You know, you guys have to go back. Who would enforce the law for the Hotel Roosevelt raiders? Mm-hmm. Who's going to go and actually physically remove them? I mean, the police couldn't do it. You'd have to, and the army, just based on what's going on in the Ukraine, I don't think they could do it.
No.
I mean, you'd have to organize.
Well, you can. You can deputize people like Daniel Penny and not prosecute him for defending his country.
Well, that's what you'd have to do. But
yes.
Unfortunately, this is far-fetched. I mean, what is possible is getting away from these areas. You know, you have to recognize the control the secret society has over these zones, and just make your life as good as you can. You know, what else can you do?
The federal government's gone. I think I don't think you have any hope.
But look at New York City. Look at Oakland. I mean, look at you know, anywhere that you have the Soros money, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. As you know, there's 100 NGOs that aren't Soros named that do the same thing, that function the same way. So they are just attacking heritage America in every way they can. This is a physical attack with soldiers against us, because this is really what these people will end up being. They're going to be in the street in gangs, and they will be, you know, enforcing order against heritage America. But they're also attacking us in the media in a million ways. And of course, promoting transgenderism in school. So this is about as straightforward a path to genocide as they
can. Well, here's put it this way. If you don't think the federal government, those in charge of the federal government, would betray the country by allowing it to be invaded, by foreign nationals to change the demographics to make it easily governed or controlled. These are the same people promoting the mutilation of children, sexual reassignment for children, which is downright satanic. Which is worse. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like they're going to be be restrained by scruples and morals in these things.
I mean, they really have the idea that humanities that is not within their tribe are basically animals, that they are morally, required to maneuver into the pen that they best deem them they should belong in. Mm-hmm. They cull them at any time, so murder, transgenderism, transhumanism, weaponized immigration, it's everything is being just thrown at us, one blow at a time. And they're always being delivered with a happy face. And if you complain, you're a racist or, kind of a bigoted, MAGA Trumpite, we don't even have any at the national levels. I mean, you have, Robert Kennedy Jr. maybe bringing up some issues, but we'll see to what extent he's actually going to deliver any kind of truth during the campaign. But beyond that, there's just no one. There's really no one in any kind of stature of power in the Republican Party that is talking about any of this, right? So that, and even though it's so obvious, it's so everyone can see what's going on, that's clear-minded. So they're controlled. Like, it has to be. There's no other way to look at it.
Well, good example, if you have any doubt or you don't understand the animosity here, is a good example is the prosecution of Mr. Penny up in New York. Yeah. He's a good Samaritan. He was interceding. He was helping people, and they're prosecuting him. At the same time, the government is completely abdicating its responsibility to protect the citizens from crime. The government has a responsibility to protect those who are working, engaging in commerce, paying taxes, following the law, and has to maintain civilization. When the government backs the insane mob that shows up, that's paid to show up. Because sane people are too busy getting on to lives to protest, really. That's one of the things. You have these crazy people, they'll show up and protest, and you have like Alvin Bragg respond to them, who just look at them, they're obviously insane. Obviously, someone like an Alvin Bragg, he has no authority anymore, or at least moral authority. He does not represent anything. He's just operating from a base of power at this point. But he's not operating in good faith. And again, it's just at this point, how long are people gonna accept this?
Right. And I mean, with when you have the Roosevelt Hotel, being the headquarters for the Roosevelt Raiders who are about to take over DA in a military operation, and this clown is battling Trump over a sexual activity, and failing to disclose it.
Did you hear what the state of New York did? That lawsuit that he lost? With sexual assault?
Yeah.
It was past the statute of limitations, so they couldn't. New York State actually changed the law so this case could be brought, and it expired. Basically, what they did is they changed the law, doing away with the statute of limitations, enabling the lawsuit to be pressed, and it ends next year.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
So that's not a bill of attainder. I don't know what it is. Obviously, it was passed just so they could go through.
It's not even a kangaroo court. I mean, it's just a clown world operation.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're using Trump as the representative of the white male. His braggadocio, mm-hmm. The pomposity and all of the kind of Trumpisms. And they're just beating him up, and they're just delivering a message, a subliminal message that white male, doesn't matter how much money you have or whatever you think your political position is, we can just beat you up anytime we feel like it. It's like a Quentin Tarantino movie, except it's Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And so this is done for psychological purposes to break the mind and hearts of the heritage American European middle class. It's that simple. So when I see this stuff with Trump, I just yawn. I mean, of course they're going to do this. It doesn't, it shouldn't mean anything to anyone.
Well, I'm sure among the hundreds of thousands or millions that are teeming into this country from south of the border illegally, that more than a few of them in a few years will end up being the future judicial nominees that can't answer basic law 101 questions from the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings, or perhaps they'll populate the various juries.
I can see them actually just declaring themselves an independent nation, an autonomous zone that's free of any like reason to even answer something that has to do with the Constitution or any of those things. I mean, these are just going to be warlords. This is really what they're capable of. If you know, I've seen some interviews with these people. I know that these are probably filtered. I imagine they get, you know, more kind of like sort of middle class values in the people that they select for these things. But really, what I think it's heading is to warlordism. There'll be violent clashes, and these people will be completely outside of any kind of. I mean, how are you going to legally control them? How are you going to control the Hotel Roosevelt Raiders in a world of incarceration? What forces are you going to use? I mean, the police in New York is already defunded to the extent that they can't really stand up against them. So they're going to become the power. They will be the power in the streets. That this is, I think, what has happened. They're going to turn it over to them to enforce these zones.
And, well, I heard Gerald Nadler, the congressman from New York, say that New York's the safest city in the country.
Yeah, and the U.S. demographics aren't going to change with when we change the law in 1964. Of course, you know, they just lie right in our face and just expect us to, because we're so mentally beaten down, to not, you know, call them on the fact that it's just ridiculous and it's a lie. And we can't think clearly because we don't have that first reaction of it is okay for me to complain when you are attacking me and you are trying to kill me and destroy my culture, my people, and my nation. And you are organized against me. And somehow here I am having a discussion with you about the morality of like immigration. I mean, this is just nonsensical. You're not talking about the right subject. The subject is warfare.
Yeah, warfare. That's why Gerald Nadler, who lobbied outgoing President Clinton to pardon Susan Rosenberg, she's the one that detonated a bomb in U.S. Congress back in 1983. She was a terrorist, a radical leftist. Susan Rosenberg also happened to be Jewish. And he got Bill Clinton to pardon her. And now she sits on a board of an organization which finances Black Lives Matter. And then you have Gerald Nadler talking about how we don't have to worry about crime. But he is getting Jewish terrorists pardoned.
But we've got to keep the 1-6 guys who walked into the Congress being invited in by the police. There's a great video. They talk about the thugs who broke the windows to get into, you know, the Congress. And there were these two agent provocateurs on these hills, and they had these tools, and it shows them smashing through. And they actually they were filmed because it was a theatrical event. And so they had cameras so that they could then show that to the world about how, you know, the true nature of the insurrection. However, other videos have come up. And directly adjacent, and I mean, Tim is like 2 or 3 feet away from these guys. There's open doors and police are waving people in. It is just hilarious to look at that. And they're right next to them. The agent provocateurs are smashing the windows. And then when the individual who's giving the, you know, like the version of reality to the public, makes her statement. I was just actually watching it. She was saying, well, you know, we had these thugs breaking windows, you know, in violent direction. And then you cut to the actual video of the truth and you see all these people, the police actually waving everyone in. I mean, it's just, you know, the media is under control in the same way that Biden is under control. You just don't, there's no way you can believe a single thing that these people say. And what you can believe is propaganda. They're trying to wreck your mind. You know, that's what's going on here.
Yep. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, it's quite a week, and next week will even be more fun, I think.
Take care. Enjoy your week. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too.